Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the July 25th edition of the PFF Forecast. Great episode here today. We're going to talk a little Aaron Rodgers. Obviously, the Packers stuff is what everyone is talking about. We're going to try to do it in a way that isn't just regurgitating and opining what we think he's going to do, but more looking at markets, seeing where we think there might be opportunity, what bets we've placed, that whole deal. Talk a little bit about Chandler Jones just requesting a trade from the Cardinals, and then a cool conversation on surplus value and more of this, a little bit of the positional value conversation that we've been having over the past week or so, and we'll close it out with recommendations. Let's rock. Friday was a hell of a day. That made me feel so. Friday, you open up the day, and you've got like Michael Thomas might not be playing.
That's right.
First five games, right? Yeah. Like that story was massive, and by the end of the day, like no one even remembered Michael Thomas, because then it's Davante Adams is pissed off. They're breaking off contract talks with the Packers. He supposedly wants $30 million, right? And then you've got Aaron Rodgers, and the PFT report, Pro Football Talk report, comes out that sportsbooks think he's retiring next week or this coming week.
Yeah.
And then at like 11:30, both of Adams and Rodgers post Instagram stories, the exact same picture of Pippen and Jordan, alluding to The Last Dance, obviously. And like the internet goes absolutely wild.
Yeah, yeah. Was that offensive to you as a long time? You're not a Bulls fan, but you're very much like a Bulls like respecter.
I mean, who's not a Jordan like, you know?
Yeah, fan? Yeah. Well, the whole team was amazing. Right. But, yeah, right. Jordan, obviously, the
I did think everything. It was kind of interesting that they chose, like, obviously they chose it because of The Last Dance, but it's kind of funny to see, like, you know, Wisconsin picking a, you know, Chicago. Yeah. You know, I thought that was kind of funny.
Did you know that Wisconsin is like really weird in that half the state hates Minnesota and couldn't, like, the rivalry is different depending upon which half the state you're in.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I remember being at a bar in La Crosse, which is on the western side, right next to Minnesota, and the Vikings like lost the last second game to the Bears. And these like bloated Packers fans are just like having a, I'm like, I thought the Bears were your rival. What is going on? And they're like, I had to have it explained to me that no, we hate Minnesota more than we hate Chicago, which is interesting. Timberwolves obviously have not provided much resistance to the world champion Bucks of late, but
yeah. So there's a lot of interesting things that were going on, especially because just a week or so ago, we were talking about our favorite, you know, if we had to make one bet on a team to win the Super Bowl. And my bet was the Packers at 20-1. And it was so interesting. That report comes out. You texted it to me, you know, as a victory lap of sorts, maybe a little premature, on the idea that he would consider retiring. I was staunchly like, there's no fucking way this guy is thinking about retiring. He's never going to actually do it. All of a sudden, 20-1 felt like a bad deal. But now the odds are all over the place.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of these limits are low. We have to be a little careful here. But if you look at a place like Pinnacle Sports is where I like to look, because they were taking $1 million bets on both sides of the Euro League for soccer. So like they will take big money. Whereas DraftKings, you have the Packers at 35-1, and you just don't know. Like I have to drive over to Indiana and place that soon here, because I don't know
what that means. A syndicate situation. 35-1. So Pinnacle. You know, and bet, Chris, Pinnacle is the place that generally I feel like, you know, okay, well, I'm looking for the sharpest odds. Where am I going to find them? Pinnacle's that place. And it's so interesting because there, Green Bay is plus 1337.
Which is fourth in the NFL, which is exactly where, by the way, like, well, I think Packers are third in our power rankings, but like the top four teams are the exact same as in our power rankings. Kansas City, Tampa Bay, Buffalo, Green Bay. Interestingly, though, Circa, which is a new sports book out of Vegas. Mm-hmm. We were there with Stadium Swim, and now they have a presence in Colorado. They're going to have a presence in Iowa starting this year. They create their own lines a lot like Pinnacle does. And as of Friday night, Tampa Bay was the favorite to win the Super Bowl in those marketplaces, which is not unrelated to what's going on with Green Bay.
Right.
Because if you take
Aaron Rodgers, Denver Broncos.
Yeah, if you take Aaron Rodgers out of the equation, who's competing with Tampa Bay to make the Super Bowl in the NFC?
But it's two-sided, right?
Yeah.
So not only does it take the biggest rival away from the Bucs in the NFC, already weak division, but then if you put Rodgers in the AFC West, it's hitting them on both sides because now the Chiefs have – and the Chiefs would still be the favorite there, right? Like you wrote this fantastic article where you put Aaron Rodgers on the Broncos and ran the simulations, and you can go check that out on PFF.com and like – The Broncos are really, really good with Aaron Rodgers. The Chiefs would be the favorite. The point being that both of them take a huge hit.
Yeah, and actually, like, I'll say this. So here's a bet that I just, like, if we are back to giving out our locks of the week or whatever, to me, now, if you buy any of the uncertainty at all, including retirement, including trade, including a rift between the organizations, Tampa Bay at 7-1 is, in my opinion, not the best bet on the board, but it's a bet where it has a really good chance of winning. It's positive EV, I believe, because we have that Tampa at about 15% to win it all. So if you have 7-1, that's 1/8, that's 12.5. So you like have, you know, you have a good, like it's a positive EV play. I am concerned about the Super Bowl hangover and everything, but like,
I'm sorry, did you see Tom Brady throw the ball?
That's what I'm saying. Like, Have we overlooked this? But I like this because
there's still a chance of it winning, even if, like, if you bet the Packers win the Super Bowl and Aaron Rodgers leaves, like you're screwed.
But
right?
it's a bet also against the Los Angeles Rams, against the San Francisco 49ers, against gestures at the rest of the NFC. Like, I don't know, like the Dallas Cowboys, like everybody's like, who's gonna stop Dallas? We had the tweet from our main account, who's gonna stop Dallas? And the number of Mike McCarthy replies was epic.
Insane.
So if you just want to bet it once, like 7-1 is not egregious. And like it's not like betting the Chiefs at like 4.5-1
is tough.
But 7-1 here, I think Tampa on it related to, and the Bucs just got better this offseason too.
Yeah, like, at DraftKings they're 6-1. So at DraftKings, the Chiefs are 5-1, the Bucs are 6-1. The Bills are 11-1, Rams are 13-1, Ravens and Niners are 14-1, which is, I think, kind of hilarious.
Pinnacle, they're 688. There was a place I showed you. I was like, I got it at 7-1. I'm like, this is not, it's not going to get any better than this, really, unless they have a huge injury. So
let's talk about this kind of seriously right now. The Packers, so I don't know what the biggest limit bet we could get driving to Indiana is. The 35-1 is an opportunity. Like, I look at 35-1 and I'm like, man, if there is that's basically saying that we think Aaron Rodgers is on his way out, right?
Yeah, because
but it's weird because the lines moved on the news, right? So it was like he's planning to retire. Sportsbooks took it off the board, and then when he and Davante Adams posted the Last Dance image, essentially saying, and we got to get Nagler on here to talk about this, but like essentially saying they're coming back, right?
Yeah.
Is there a way for you to read that Last Dance post other than that?
Yes, that what they had just done was their last dance. But the problem is they didn't win anything. Like,
right.
I made a joke saying, like, will this couple make their fifth road NFC championship game together?
Right,
You'll have to tune in to find out. And it's like,
there's okay. So I see what you're getting at there.
Yeah.
There's no way. Now the analogy is really good for a couple of reasons, and I'm going to break this down a little bit because we talked about the Last Dance a bunch when it was airing. But the synergies between these two situations up to the point where it's actually the greatest player of all time and they're actually winning championships is really close, right? Because the Last Dance really focused on Jordan's despise, the way that he despised, yes, his disgust for Jerry Krause. And that maybe was the most poignant. I think maybe it was more about that than it was even the fact that they were going to come back together. But really, like, what I'm dealing with is the same bullshit that Jordan was dealing with in the front office. Like, the hatred that Jordan had for Jerry Krause was insane. And it feels like that's what Rodgers
And it's so
said.
Unfortunate because our colleague Kevin Cole, who I think almost always approached, like, I always am impressed with how sober he is when he approaches takes, because he said, in today's NFL, a first round pick taken at the QB position at 26 is closer to in value to a pick in the fourth round than it is to the pick at number one. So should we be as upset? Like, should anybody have been as upset about the Jordan Love thing as it was? And it's like, and I get that. That's rational. That might have been what the Packers were thinking. It's also revisionist history not to, like, point out that Rodgers had regressed quite a bit up until 19. But the problem that I have is that isn't how Rodgers would have ever seen any of this. He was taken at pick 24. He was the heir apparent to a Hall of Famer. They traded up for that spot. And so if Green Bay was like, oh, what's the big deal? Did they just flat out miss this? What I'm saying? Like,
I agree there, but I think the whole problem with it is actually nothing really to do with where, you know, they took a player at the back end of the first round.
Yeah.
You're right. It's not that big of a deal. The big deal was that messaging that you just gave me is exactly what they should have said to Rodgers.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem was that they didn't bother to communicate it, right? So it's like, what's a good analogy of something like this? It'd be like you had, I don't know, say you had some power bars on your desk, right? You have one left and I'm starving. I come around and I'm like, I'm grabbing Eric's last power bar. And you come by and you're like, dude, you took my fucking last power bar? You couldn't ask me?
And you were like, it's $2.
And my point is like, dude, it's a fucking power bar. Who cares? The point is, I could have just asked you about it. It would have been no fucking big deal. You would have forced it. You would have given it to me immediately. And so to me, that's like the whole thing here. And it's, That is why it makes sense for me to think about, okay, what Rodgers is saying is, I fucking hate Brian Gutekunst with that post. Clearly, Davante Adams feels the same way. And they want
UW everyone, all grad, by the way.
Yeah. They want everyone to know it.
But my thing is, the reason you screwed this up, if you're a Green Bay, is you didn't have the outs. You weren't like, this is why I will go to bat, not as much as, after all the decisions were made, I will go to bat for the Kyle Pitts draft pick because you did not have outs if you were the Falcons, right? You did not have, we can trade Matt Ryan after this. We can get rid of Matt Ryan after this. You didn't have any, right? So it made sense to, whether you extended Matt to begin with or just traded him or whatever, the fact that you backed yourself into a situation where you had to trade Julio, all that notwithstanding, the specific thing of taking Kyle Pitts was because you did not have any outs with your quarterback. So it's just like, play it out, right? Mm-hmm, don't upset the apple cart in that one factor. I would respect the Packers a whole lot more if they had done the Jordan Love selection with the knowledge that they could get out from under Rodgers, and they were willing to do so no matter what. Because the point about, everybody talks about the Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes thing. Alex Smith had his best season in the NFL and they traded him.
Right.
Right. Like, you have to have a plan and you have to have outs. Like, it's the same thing in Chicago. If Andy Dalton's a Pro Bowl quarterback this year, what do they still are going to get rid of him after the season, right? Like, the problem the Packers had with the Rodgers thing is they had no, they really didn't leave themselves an opportunity there, and it was a breach in communication. If they said, look, Aaron, it's just like with Brett. He's sitting for 3 years. Hopefully you can ride off into the sunset peacefully, unlike Favre, and we're all good. But that's not what drafting a quarterback in the first round means today. And that's not how that's not how Rodgers took it, and that's why we're in the situation. And you could have just communicated it better. Instead, the second best team in the NFC is a clusterfuck right now.
Yeah, it's not good. The interesting thing, though, is I still, So I stick. I think my favorite bet is what I'm saying. I think my favorite bet to
still
win the Super Bowl is now Packers 35-1.
Yeah. Yesterday I was lying. Today I'm telling the truth.
Yeah. because here's what I'm trying to think about. What are the actual avenues other than retirement?
Well, and that's the one card Gutekunst has to play, which is you really like football, Aaron, and you're only going to need to play football here. And I'm willing to eat them. I'm willing. And the other thing is, and this is why Deshaun Watson is showing up to Houston. That's why Chandler Jones is freaking showing up to Arizona, yep. Even though it costs a lot of money to 50K. Hold out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the card. That's when people talk about the NFL players union, how much they suck over this COVID thing. It's like, wait a sec. This is the thing you think sucks?
This is the thing you're pissed about, right? Like,
you have less power than you can't really
hold
do
out. Yeah. You literally can't hold out anymore. Yeah, because, I mean, so what? They're not going to trade Devontae Adams, right? There's just no way. I don't know that he has enough leverage there. Even Rodgers is like trying to find a way to build up that leverage. But I just don't the reason I don't see anything other than retirement being an avenue for him to get out. And I can't imagine that he's actually going to retire. Because I also think there's something to this where it's like some weird stuff is Aaron Rodgers' life has taken kind of an interesting turn, right? He's like getting married to an actress. The way that they are interacting, what they're doing, like there's definitely some things about him wanting to change his life a little bit.
Yeah.
It feels like
I don't know if you've ever had this situation. I may or may not have, but like, it's sort of like one of those where it's sort of like you're trying to get the other person to break up with you. And so you're acting out. And in Rodgers' case, he literally doesn't have the ability to break up with them other than to like retire. So he's sort of like acting out and like trying to do things that would be like, oh man, we don't run Aaron anymore. And it's like Gutekunst is sort of like just kind of playing it. You know, he's honestly, given everything that's happened since January, he's probably done all the right things. It's just the situation that they put themselves in.
Yeah, just a terrible, terrible way of doing everything beforehand.
It's so weird with these decisions in NFL, right? Because we had this discussion with the other team in the NFC North who's now going to be the favorite in Minnesota, where it's like, given the Cousins deal, they've made a lot of good moves. And it's like, it always comes back to, and then like a lot of Vikings fans want to be like, see, you can still win. I'm like, no. D.D. Westbrook is a keynote signing for you because you have all these liabilities and stuff that you have And it's like, it's so interesting in the NFL because we want, you know, the news cycle is such that we want to evaluate every decision sort of in this Markovian way. Given this circumstance, this decision's a great one. Mm-hmm. And when you come up for air, you have to look and say, and this is why we talk about, you know, we get in a lot of comments are like, well, why you like the Browns so much? Or why you like the Ravens? It's because their decisions more or less make sense. One follows from another, and there's a plan there. And there's something, I think, endearing to that plan, even if it's not necessarily something we agree with 100%. At least you can see A follows B follows C. And it's like, with some of these, it's like, what? Like some of these is like, yeah, I get what the Packers are doing now, but let's not give them a ton of credit for putting out a fire they created.
Oh, absolutely. Like, we should absolutely not give them any credit for putting out a fire that they've created, because they certainly did. The last day of the PFF 40% off sale is July 26th, which is tomorrow. You may be listening to this on the 26th. By the way, if you're listening to this on like the 27th or 28th, maybe go give it a try. You never know. Some benevolent people may be looking to help you out.
George is kind.
Just saying that. Save 40 is the promo code at pff.com, and there's a ton of reasons to go get your PFF subscription right now. The fantasy football draft guide is out. All of our rankings and projections are up and are being updated on the minute as news comes out. So you'll want to make sure you have those at the ready for when your draft happens. The College Football Preview magazine is up there. If you like betting college football, I highly recommend going and getting that. There's projections in there from our simulation. The 2022 NFL draft guide is also out. And all of the premium locked NFL and college and betting fantasy content is also there. Save 40% off means that you can get that, all of those things, for just $5.99 a month with the PFF Edge subscription. And of course, my recommendation, get yourself ready for the season with the props tool. Get an elite subscription for 40% off. You will not regret it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Let's do.
Chair's kind of interesting today.
Well, maybe you're uncomfortable because you need to use the lawnmower 4.0 more. Maybe it's not the chair.
Maybe it is. I'm a little lighter.
Maybe you should go check out Manscaped and the.
Are we doing the ad read or no?
I don't know. I was going to try and move into it gracefully, but it's the lawnmower 4.0. So as someone that has used, I feel like an early adopter here. Before, so Manscaped obviously now pays us to do, you know, some advertising for them. But like, this is no bullshit. I was one of those people that bought a Manscaped trimmer, like when I saw it on Instagram, you know, in an ad like however long ago. So I've been using Manscaped for a while. I will say this. Their products have improved dramatically over time. Each one that they come out with has been way, 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 way
not
better.
Not many. So like, I'll say this. Whether you're a man, a woman, a Chiefs fan, or
those are definitely all mutually exclusive.
A Chiefs
exclusive.
Minus three better in the Super Bowl. It became pretty clear you need tools. And Manscaped is the tools for the family jewels. You know? And what Mahomes showed is without your full complement of tools, it's really hard to get anything done.
Yeah, you're in the turf a lot.
Like, I mean, think about the lawnmower 4.0 as sort of like, you know, we say running backs don't matter. It's all a product of the offensive line. Like, think about the lawnmower 4.0 as the offensive line for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, for example, let's say.
I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, my biggest thing whenever I am buying clippers to use anywhere on my body. Number one thing is you don't want to be bleeding after you use them.
No, you don't.
And so that's my number one qualification. Every Manscaped product that I've used has gotten better at keeping you safe there. Promo code is PFF at manscaped.com. You get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com with promo code PFF. I would go check it out. It's going to be summer. It's going to be hot. You'll want to make sure you're staying trim. Okay, let's do a little Chandler Jones here. I don't think we need to say too much about this, but what he requested a trade from the Cardinals. The Cardinals obviously just went out and got J.J. Watt to be on the other side of him. There's all this talk about how good their, you know, pass rush is going to be this year. What do you think the result of that is? Do you think he ultimately gets traded? Do you think they just keep him there? Like, what's the deal?
It's so different. Like, we have so many fewer historical examples, right? Like, I remember, you know, John Abraham was somebody who like held out from the Jets, went to the Falcons. Pass rushers are players. The edge position is a position that where players can transfer from team to team pretty easily. So you saw Khalil Mack make an impact almost immediately. Yep. You've seen guys, even like on the older stage, like Dwight Freeney was on a different team every year. Terrell Suggs helped the Chiefs win a Super Bowl. Like all that. So I think relative to other players at positions, he has a better chance of being traded, and he has a better chance of being traded sort of out of the blue. Like you come up for air, like Yannick Ngakoue last year, where it's like, oh my God, Danielle Hunter's hurt. Who's going to rush the passer? All right, let's go. The problem is that the historical comps go away because the players aforementioned, like they can't hold out or they lose a significant amount of money. And so he can't just like sit out. But I do think that there will be a team that's like, they get through the preseason, let's say, and they're like, man, we're a pass rusher away from being amazing, or we're a pass rusher away from being good. Like, that's what Minnesota thought last year with Yannick. So I can see him being traded. The question becomes,
to whom?
I mean, who doesn't have a good pass rusher? Like, the Colts right now? Like, let's say, what happens if Carson Wentz has an amazing... What if Carson Wentz
had... They did just draft Kwity-Paye.
Yeah, but like we know the hit rate of edge players after a certain amount of time. The Colts have a little bit of money. Probably they'd have to do some things. But what about like what if Trevor Lawrence absolutely snaps in the preseason or looks really good in training? You're talking about a team that has $29 million in cap space, but also only $22 million tied up in like their core players for like on offense. You know, Lawrence, Etienne, Chark, Chenault, so on and so forth. Because he's not even a rental for them, right? Like, yeah. They've built such a young nucleus that they could go with him. The Panthers are probably – the Panthers have a lot of cap space, but they went after Reddick, and they also have Burns, who I think is a sneaky player of the year candidate. The Jets could be one. You go Lawson, Chandler Jones. Again, this is one where
– it makes sense for a lot of teams.
Sometimes you just know, though. Like, right, remember, like, if Zach Wilson in training camp is like – okay, this is the guy, right? And all we need, and like we have Lawson on one side and God knows who on the other, mm-hmm. then let's go ahead and throw Chandler Jones in there and try to make a play for this, you know, the AFC East, which I think is going to be a little weaker because the Bills are going to lose a lot of player hours to COVID. Like, let's go, you know? Those are teams that I think have a shot. What were examples that you thought?
So I have one team that I think makes a ton of sense. And this is by far my favorite landing spot for him, and that would be the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
That he will be playing in that, you know, be playing with Flores, who, you know, it's a wizard on the defensive side of the ball.
Would they have to trade Xavier Howard to make this work? Because I think
that's the interesting thing is how they would make it happen. And I'm kind of like thinking about just doing some gymnastics there. For the Cardinals, that would be a really interesting move and one that I would very much support for them. But I don't know if they would have to trade him. Let me look at their cap here. But that was a place where they clearly don't have, you know, they have defensive pieces, but the pieces that they don't really have are edge defenders. You look at Emmanuel Ogba, who...
Ogba was like low-key good last year, but
he was
low-key
good, but like he was 48th in PFF grade last year out of like 108 players.
What about this team? And I know, God, that baseball game was so funny when they ripped on Skyline, but like, what about the Bengals?
Bengals would be very interesting.
The Bengals have the two key cornerstones on offense on rookie deals.
They just signed Sam Hubbard to an extension.
That's today. I thought when somebody said Hubbard in the Slack chat, I was thinking of like the Cardinals right tackle or something or former right tackle. I don't even know. Okay, so that one's off the board. Obviously, Washington's already stacked up there. The Colts do have money. Detroit, San Francisco, probably not. Chargers, probably not. Browns already have Clowney and Garrett. But like, those top four, like the Broncos, they're
Jaguars, they're, Broncos, Panthers, Jets.
So the Broncos and Panthers are probably a no, given that who they have there. Mm-hmm. Injuries are always a big deal too. He could wait out for injuries and make a team, more desperate. You know,
the Patriots honestly would be interesting.
Wouldn't be the first time Belichick
goes back and brings someone back. That'd be fascinating. The interesting thing about Chandler Jones is I think people view him so like he continuously gets brought up by other players as being one of the most underrated pass rushers in the NFL. And I definitely think at this point, like the number of times we talk about him being underrated, maybe means he's not underrated anymore. Mm-hmm. But, he's been good, but he hasn't been great, you know? Like, what's like the value for him? Because, you know, you look at a guy like J.J. Watt who comes in. J.J. Watt as their only pass rusher is a little scary. You definitely like the idea of having him with Chandler Jones. But I don't know that Chandler Jones is maybe what, top 15 to 20?
Makes a lot of sense for Arizona to figure out how to get this thing done. He also has a big enough cap hit where an extension probably helps Arizona, right? Because you're talking, I think, in the $21 million range for his certain – so he's actually – like if they can get him like 3-year deal. The issue was that Jones – so – he was worth, like, in 2019, when he played a full season, he was worth, if you take WAR and you multiply it by, you know, how much each WAR costs, which is sort of how you get surplus value, he was worth about $15 million, which is about what he was paid in 2019. The issue then, the next year, is he's barely on the field.
Yep.
He was paid $21 million. So you're looking at a surplus value of negative $20 million or so.
Not good.
Like, that's not great. And he is streaky, right? So, like, after joining Arizona, you have two seasons above, like, with really good WAR. Then you have an 18 season where he wasn't good at all. And then you have a 19 season where he was amazing and last year's hurt. Like, you just don't know what you're getting here. Some players, though, like, as they age and you, like, mess with their role a little bit, can offer value. And, like, I think if I'm Arizona, the problem – here's just a small question. Like, what do you think Arizona's end game is here? Because Cliffs doesn't have that much time. Mm-hmm. You know, they're a win now team,
right?
Even though they're fourth place in their division and betting odds right now. What do you think? I mean, I don't know. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense for them not to try.
Yeah, I don't think it makes a ton of sense for them not to try and keep him around. I think Cliff probably wants them to keep him around, right? Because if you trade him for like some draft pick, you know, that he might not be there to see that player get drafted. I mean, you look at his PFF grade, as you mentioned. So 2016, 2017, PFF grade of a pass rush grade of around 85. And you mentioned, right? Over 0.2 of a win above replacement. He was a surplus value in the positive direction for the Cardinals. And in 2019, had a pass rush grade of 90, his highest grade of his career. And, you know, was very, very good, had almost 80 pressures.
Yeah. The one that makes you wonder, and again, like, I'm not here to try to understand player psyche, but the year that the Cardinals were truly the worst team in the NFL, he had his worst season for the team. Like, and he played almost 1,000 snaps, talking about 42 pressures. He did have a decent amount of sacks, but like, he was not as productive down for down.
Yep.
So if you're a team that's like boom or bust, let's say you are Jacksonville and you want to say, okay, I'm going to bring him in to be like, I'm going to bring him, and Jason Fitzgerald talked about this a lot, where you pay a younger player rookie contract and pair him with a veteran on a bigger contract. Mm-hmm. If he wants to go be one of the cornerstone pieces of like a Jacksonville team, Jacksonville might not be good some of those years. Right. And you wonder if you're getting any value out of him in those years. Whereas if he goes to a contender right away, you're probably assured that he's going to give you great snaps, but he's going to have to fit in. And if you're Jones, you're going to have to probably take less. Like, you could, if you're Jones, you could probably ask for more money out of the Jaguars and the Jets of the world than you probably could out of the, you know, let's say you talk about Dolphins. You probably can't ask for as much out of the Dolphins, given that they had to give up a lot to get you.
Right.
And our own Austin Gale was the one that said a good fit for Xavier Howard would be the Arizona Cardinals. That might be like the blockbuster trade we eventually see.
Yeah, I mean, if that were the case, doesn't that feel like a win for the Cardinals?
Yeah, the problem is you just don't, like, so now your defensive line is what? Because they lost Reddick, who had a great year and a contract year. He was really bad before then. You have Watt there.
Yep.
Your front seven is two first round like raw linebackers, Watt and a bunch of nobodies.
I mean, you're basically hoping Watt can play and that Marcus Golden.
Yeah,
like has a career year, but you look on the outside and you go, man. Yeah. I mean, they've got Malcolm Butler, who is your number one guy. You have Robert Alford, who, like, man, you know, that's like very scary. Those are your two corners.
And Alford, I don't even know. Like, did they resign it? Because he hasn't played and then you have Darquez Dennard. You have as an inside player, you have Byron Murphy, who, you know, we liked a lot coming out of Washington, but has been kind of butt since joining the team. So, man, it's probably incumbent upon you to figure it out, because it's not looking great after Jones there on the outside. You do have flexibility with Simmons and Collins, though.
And Buda Baker. Like, I think you could have a nice defense there with a
– Buda, big fan of PFF.
Yeah. It's weird. Like – oh man, it's super, super strange. As if we had something against Buda Baker. I love Buda Baker, actually.
Yeah, that's great.
Let's get to surplus value here. Talk a little bit. You mentioned that. Before we do, I want to tell you guys about our friends at Fantrax. I don't know if you have this issue, Eric, but I do, which is like, when I play fantasy football, I hate the league manager that I use. Mm-hmm. Whether it's like ESPN or Yahoo, they suck. And Fantrax does a very, very nice job of
making I signed up for a best ball, like a 700 person version of it the other day.
And you liked it?
Yeah, it was very, very easy to use. One of my friends invited me. It was easy to do all the stuff. So that they check all the boxes, George.
Yeah. The cool thing about it is like the customization that you can use with Fantrax is like way better than a lot of these other sites, so like player salary and like contract options if you have a keeper league, multi-team trades, which I think is pretty cool. Good luck executing one with if you have a group of friends like mine. But you know, may God be with you. You can go to fantrax.com/PFF and get a chance to win an autographed jersey from our guy Josh Allen, Buffalo Bills quarterback. If you do so, sign up at fantrax.com/PFF. Surplus value. So if this is, I think a lot of our listeners probably have an idea of what surplus value is, but if you don't, and you're listening to this for maybe one of the first times, like, talk about surplus value, what it means, and how we calculate it.
Well, and we're certainly in development here. We have some updates that we're making to WAR, and a lot of that is to take some of the great work that Brad Spielberger, as well as guys like Kevin Cole and Ben, people in our group, Timo Risky as well, like, sort of trying to make these things, trying to say, if you pay a defensive lineman this much money, what kind of surplus value are you getting? What kind of, if he plays amazingly, are you going to get your bang for your buck? And so the idea is, I think, pretty simple. You find out what the player's price is, which is not trivial. It's either like cap hit or APY or something like that, because we don't live in vacuums of seasons. And you say, okay, how many millions of dollars is a WAR worth, right? Yep. And like, you can break it down by position. I haven't found that to be as helpful because positions are pretty fluid, but you can like break it up between like quarterback and non-quarterback. And like, just for like reference, like, given how efficient rookie quarterbacks have been of late, like, one win above replacement from a rookie quarterback or from a quarterback in general is worth about $9 million. Whereas everywhere else on the field, a win above replacement is A, extremely difficult to get, and B, worth about $45 million, which sort of reflects how hard it is to get. Like, if you have a guy who has an amazing season and is worth one WAR, then he's worth that much money, which no non-quarterback is making that much money. And so, like, you can imagine, like, Aaron Donald, worth a ton of money. Somebody on a rookie deal, worth a ton of money if they're making veteran sort of production. Quarterbacks, it's sort of interesting, right? Like, you sort of think about, like, players like Cousins, players like Dak Prescott, and you're wondering, okay, is the difference between... So, like, take, Dak, Kirk... Let's say Kirk's probably in that 2.5 WAR range. Dak, I think, in a very good season is worth about like 3.5, 4. Like, people are like, oh, they're not that much different, right? They're not that much different. And it's like, no, like, once you like go in and grade the games, Cousins is a good player. But like, when you pay him that $30 million, you're sort of getting what you pay for, maybe a little less actually. Whereas with Dak, it's like, if I add another win above replacement as a QB, I mean, you're talking about, $13.5 million worth of value to that team, right? If you're getting in that four WAR range.
Yep. The Rodgers, Brady.
Exactly. Mahomes. And that's why sort of, and again, like, we haven't pinned this down until now, but it sort of like jives with our intuition, which is like the Cousins of the world, like, when you pay them market deals, they can never be worth it. But when you pay the Bradys, the Mahomeses, the Rodgers of the world, you can't pay them enough.
Right.
And it's like, because you have this, like, you have this process that's magnetic, right? Where, like, no matter what, you're paid in this band. And the problem is the line is sort of like really thin between like the Cousins and the Bradys, but the output, when you take those inputs and put them into the production function, they grow, right? Whereas running backs are the exact opposite. You take Henry versus Alexander Mattison, which is a humongous talent gap, and the output in number of wins is like a quarter of a win.
And it anchors people, obviously, and like, that it's important to say the difference in talent is massive. It's interesting you say, like, so one of the things that I find interesting is, okay, you're making this this discount for, wins from a quarterback versus wins from all other players, right? If you just said, like, let everyone be the same, you've got about $30 million per win above replacement. And so then you have, Brady being worth last year $180 million. And I guess I'm curious, like, where do you lie if it was a free market, like if there was no salary cap? That, honestly, those numbers make sense to me. Like, I think the reason that we have to do this scaling is because of
the constraints that exist to begin with, right? Like,
the salary cap, right? So, like, in one sense, it offends me a little bit that we would say, oh, a win for a quarterback is worth less than a win for another player. But it allows you to make some, it allows you to evaluate what's going on in the league, right?
Yeah.
There's like two things you can benefit from. One is to have this like hypothetical situation where you go, right, like if it was a completely free market and you could sign anyone for any amount of money, like baseball, what would you see? And I think you would see, right? Baseball contracts are absurd.
Yeah, you'd also, baseball is different because analytics is not easier in baseball, but analytics is more solved. And you saw like for two straight summers, there was no free agents that were getting any money because mm-hmm. all the teams had the same information. Baseball is different than football because like the Niners run a totally different scheme than the Jets, right, or they may not anymore, but they're going to, but like they're going to value players differently on the open market. Right. So like, whereas baseball, like no one plays baseball differently. It's get on base, hit home runs, walk, strike people out.
And that's actually interesting because the one position where that doesn't really matter is quarterback.
Is quarterback. Right. And so that's why, yeah. I mean, I'll say this. If we didn't have the constraints that we currently have, like the reason that you just like you add up all the WAR that players make, that quarterbacks make in a season, which, you know, in a last season, there was 173 WAR to go out. I believe it was 65 went to quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So quarterbacks are worth about a third of the wins that are accumulated on a football field, which I think seems right. Yep. But like, so they're worth all that much money, but and they make this much money. But the fact that they make this much money is directly of a product of A, the franchise tag, which Dak Prescott used, or that they used on Dak Prescott, and the rookie contract, the rookie wage mm-hmm. scale. When you don't, and it's a singular position, right? So like a bigger percentage, I think, of starters in the NFL at quarterback are on the rookie wage scale than other positions. Mm-hmm. So you have that like that artificially suppressed market, which means wins are sort of worth less on the million, but then they're also generated more often by quarterbacks. That's why they sort of level, right? Like a guy, let me just pull up like an example here to sort of illustrate the point. So like take Khalil Mack last season, his value in $35.5 million. You take like a, and again, these are going to be updated, but he's about a 4/10 of a win player. He's mm-hmm. and so translate that into millions, it's 35.5. He made 26.5, so his surplus is about 10. Mm-hmm. And like Brady was, as you said, 46. Rodgers is 45, by the way, which makes the $90 million he asked for over 2 years interesting, reportedly. So like that's where that scales. If you had a completely free market, I feel like the rookie wage scale screws it all up, right? Because mm-hmm. like, what would you bid on Trevor Lawrence right away? Would you?
I mean, I think teams would.
Yeah,
that's what we saw when you could pay them whatever. I mean, yeah. Here's another thing that I was thinking about because the immediate, you know, when you brought up Cousins, like we've had this conversation a bunch, which is, don't overpay for a guy whose ceiling is like QB8. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
And the illustration of it, I think you said it really well, and it got me thinking about, are all wins created equal, right? You were talking about the production function, right? So like a quarterback that's worth 2 wins above replacement, 3 wins above replacement, each win past a certain point to me feels like it's worth more.
Yes.
Where it's like,
and I think actually WAR reflects that. Like I think WAR is nonlinear in that way. Like if you are in a super, if you're on one of these super teams, like the wins that you get, like that's why last year Green Bay had all the players with all the high WARs because like,
right.
Yeah.
To me, it feels like, what would you, if you were auctioning off the wins individually, mm-hmm. right? Like I would pay so much more to go from 3.5 to 4.5,
yes,
or 4 to 5, than I would to go from 2 to 3.
Yeah, going from and we talked about this a number of times. In going from 3 wins to 8 wins, I think this way, this is the question mark I have about like Zimmer and Salah, right? There's a different skill set in going from being a 5-win team to a 10-win team than there is in going from a 10-win team to a 14-win team mm-hmm. and contending for a Super Bowl. And the same thing's true about players, right? Like, I think that, so like, let's say Zach Wilson comes in this year. We have him projected about 2 WAR, 1.76. If he comes in and does that over Darnold, that plus the correlations between other players like Davis and stuff, like if that gets the Jets from, you know, Pythagorean, I can't remember what it was, 4.5, 5 wins to 8 or 9 wins, that's extremely valuable and relatively cheap.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and as you said, the cost of going from like an Alex Smith type to a Mahomes type is hitting on an extremely unlikely bet. And then when doing so, the decision to pay him $500 million over 10, right? Because that's like currently where like the Browns and Ravens are, which is, and the Ravens are a little different, but let's go with the Browns. You're in the miry clay, as they say. Mm-hmm. You get Mayfield, you get a great coach. That gets you into that 10-11 win range. That was not cheap, but relatively inexpensive relative to what Baker's going to have to do to get into that 13-14 win range and in a Super Bowl, and the decision by a very smart Browns front office to decide whether to pay that and how to support that too, which is costly in the, I would say, you have to make tough decisions. Like our colleague Kevin Cole, who I mentioned earlier, said that's the next test for the Browns front office is, When the great player you draft comes up for a contract, do you have the stones to trade a Chandler Jones like Belichick did, to trade a Jamie Collins like Belichick did? Because that is the cost of going from win 11 to win 12, 13, 14. Yeah. And as you said, that cost, if it's all on the quarterback's shoulders, can you imagine that's so valuable to have all your risks concentrated on one variable, one player. There are a handful of quarterbacks for which
that's
true.
That's also interesting because I think this is why I feel that there's an exponential relationship between quarterback wins and value as opposed to a linear one. Because when I think about, I'm trying to quantify like the big differences between, let's say, Brady and Cousins, right? I know Brady is better than Cousins in a vacuum. But then there is also the, if you have a guy that is worth 3 wins versus a guy that's worth 4.5 wins, I also believe that the tide that raises all boats is also stronger, right? Yeah. So that like there's a difference between needing your supporting cast to help you be worth that and you being that valuable, making other players more valuable, a la Rodgers and Brady. So like it underscores really two things. I will pay whatever it takes for the guy that is actually that good.
Yeah.
I will never pay anything for a guy that, even if I think there's like a small chance in hell he makes it to that top tier, but almost all the time he's not going to be there, I'm never paying it. And holy shit, Tom Brady was a value last year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about this though. And I think about this in terms of betting. You have to hit a parlay to win the Super Bowl. I think we're all in agreement there.
Yep.
You can do that one of two ways. You can lay -300 on your quarterback and hope for a bunch of even money bets to hit, right? That's what Minnesota is doing. That's what the Rams are doing. That's what Detroit's doing. That's what all the teams with the Cousin type. Yep. And the trick here is that -300 is very uncorrelated with the other +100s. A team like the Jets is making a +200 bet on their quarterback, but they're laying -200 on a bunch of positions like Corey. Like the Chiefs with Sammy Watkins is a -200 bet to be a decent number 3 wide receiver, right. And he was fine, right? You're laying -200 across the board. Which one's a better – that one's the better payout. But when you have a quarterback like Mahomes, the -500 is also you found an edge to the sportsbook because that -500 is correlated with all the +100s that are on your board.
Exactly.
And that's where the value – and you said exponential, and that's the point. Like – with parlays in a sports book, like, you know, as you increase the number of legs, your edge decreases relative to the sports book exponentially. But if you find a correlated parlay that the book lets you bet,
you're in great shape, in a sense,
gain stacking, exponentially on the sports book.
Yeah, it's stacking in fantasy.
And that's what I don't know. Like, that's where we have to do a better job in analytics to be able to quantify that a little bit. Like, what is the difference between Kirk and Mahomes in like how they enhance the players around them? I think we're kind of getting there, but like it's still an open question. I think we can all see it, but I don't know if necessarily we can quantify it quite as well. But it is really the difference. And if I'll take, you know, because again, we've all bet on Sundays. Like when your rookie quarterback hits, right? It's like you bet, you have a three-team parlay and you have a 1 o'clock game, a 4 o'clock game, and a Sunday football game. The 1 o'clock one hits. The 4 o'clock one hits. You're into Sunday night and you got tons of freedom. If you don't like that bet anymore, you can bet the other side can lock in a profit. If you love that bet, you can add to it, right? At even money. Mm-hmm. And that's where I talk about the Jaguars this way. If the Jaguars get into the preseason and say, Jesus Christ, Trevor Lawrence is the next Mahomes. Well, then they can go pick up a Chandler Jones and be like, let's win this year. Like, who's to say that, Indianapolis and Tennessee have to win the South? Well, let's win this year. Like, all that kind of stuff. But, that's the numerical game you play with the rookie quarterback. And it gives you such an advantage over all but the teams that have the correlated parlay with their quarterback.
Yeah. Tom Brady, worth just over in new war, around 5 wins above replacement, which would put his value in the $50 million range. He was cost $25 million last year. That is absolutely banana land crazy. Let's close it out here. Recommendations. I mean, you already gave a really strong recommendation for Manscaped, so I'm not sure you can get really any better than that, but I'll let you try.
Well, okay, so I'm going to give one that I think everybody's going to want. And then I'm gonna give one.
You're doubling up on us today.
Well, so
love it.
So I'll say this: Ted Lasso is as great in season 2, episode 1, as it was. And my wife hadn't watched it with me, so here's a little story. Last year, I was super nervous about college football because the betting landscape was so weird. So I was I'm in charge of Green Line and all that stuff for college football. And so on Saturday mornings, I would calm down before the games by watching the episode of Ted Lasso from that week. And it was just the most soothing thing. But my wife hadn't watched it. So I was like, hey, let's watch all the shows of Ted Lasso. So we did that yesterday while I was grinding a little bit of code. So that one, I think that's a free space. But I'm going to add another one to this. It is a book, Why Everything You Know About Soccer Is Wrong, The Numbers Game.
Is it a different soccer book?
Yep. Chris Anderson and David Sally. I've had a really fun time reading about soccer. That's another good book about soccer.
I need you to write down all your soccer books. I need to find, so one of the things that I was looking for recommendations of was I need to find some better things to listen to that aren't, I want them to be longer than podcasts, right? I want a topic to really dive into, but also things that aren't so long that I'm never going to finish them. So some medium-sized books on audio would be great. My recommendation is something that I made for the first time. Little coconut chicken curry. I found it on New York Times. By the way, New York Times cooking, it's $5. I also highly recommend that. But the recipe is from originally Genevieve Co. And I guess this one has been adapted a little bit by a couple of other people at New York Times. But I have a recommendation on how you should make it. It tells you to add water at some point. It's add a cup and a half of water. Don't add the water. I don't like really watery curry, so I did not add the water. Humble recommendation for you all.
So you didn't add.
So it's coconut milk is the main liquid in it.
Gotcha.
It's very, very easy to make, and at one point it calls for you to add water and then cook it down. And I just decided not to add water and cook down the coconut milk.
I kind of do that when I make my soups.
You're a soup guy.
I'm a soup guy.
Favorite soup.
So it used to be a tie between chili, normal chili, not insane people chili, right. And this sounds bad, but chicken noodle soup. But I will, chicken noodle soup that's made well is the perfect and again, growing up in Minnesota, it was always cold, so that's sort of the context there. Chili is so hard to come by now in this town that it's gone, it's fallen down. But I'll go, so there's a place, not to give free advertisement, Kruger's downtown, right next to Bakersfield. And I used to go in there, is this real chili? I didn't want to offend anybody, no, it's real chili. So I'd order that. Well, they don't anymore. They don't and are seasonal or whatever. The pandemic really screwed them up.
I wouldn't put that on my recommendations list for people, by the way.
Kruger
Number one soup, in my opinion, is ramen.
That's right. We have done ramen together a few times.
I think, and you're not going to be able to get good ramen here in Cincinnati, unfortunately. But if you go to a good ramen place and get good ramen, it's, in my opinion, the top I think really good pho is also like, okay. I think those are probably one and two for me.
There are people that listen to the show that like will talk to me and say, you know, the food recommendations are like pretty, if you split the difference between you and me, pretty good.
Hmm.
So like you're the false negative, right? So you have some false negatives, I think. And I'm a false pot. I think some things are good that probably aren't good, right? Like
maybe. That was our show. Thank you guys for hanging out. We love you all. We'll see you on Wednesday. Peace.